Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
Including finishing up Ecclesiastes today. And I'd like to give you a commentary. I hope I've really whetted your appetite for this book. I think it's a marvelous book, but it must be dealt with some detail or it's going to be totally misinterpreted. One of my favorite commentators is a man called Loophole. I like him in every book I've read except Zechariah. So if you would like a commentary to follow up on your study of Ecclesiastes, this is Loophole. It's called Exposition of Ecclesiastes, and it's a really good book. I hope you'll get it. I like this guy in all the books that he does. Okay, thank you very much. And let's go then to chapter 11. We're going to begin in verse 7, going through the end of chapter 12. The light is pleasant, and it is good for the eyes to see the sun. And we're talking about the perspective of a person who takes time to look at the flowers, okay? You might want to see Psalms 49:19 for right here. Indeed, a man should live many years. Let him rejoice in them all, and let him remember the days of darkness, for they shall be many. Everything that is to come will be futility. What's that saying? He's trying to prepare people for the fact that in all life a little rain must fall. Enjoy the good days while they're here, because there's going to be days of pain and sorrow. Senility is going to be a major, growing old in chapter 11 here. There's going to be some great days in life. There's going to be some hard days. Be content with today and remember the good days when the bad ones come. That seems to be what he's talking about. Now, some people say the darkness here might refer to the days of Sheol, and that's possible. Then it goes on to say, rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and desires of your eyes, yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. Remember that in chapter 11, we're going to talk about old age in just a minute, we're not talking to older people who've already experienced old age. But since chapter 10, we've been talking to particularly young men who are entering governmental service or community service. And he's been preparing these young men to deal with the king and to their parishioners, if you please. So he says, you're going to get old one day. I want you to experience something of what it means to get old and feeble so you'll understand others. What he's saying, you're young now. That's good. Enjoy your youth. Follow your heart's desires. Do the good things while you can. But wait a minute, young man. Wait a minute. I want you to know that God's going to make you come into account for every idle word and every deed done in the body. Enjoy life, young man. Live it to the fullest, young man. But I want you to know you're accountable for your actions. You're responsible for who you are and what you do with your gifts. This idea of judgment is repeated again in chapter 12, verse 14. I see an allusion to it in chapter 12, verse 1. It's really saying we need to remember that we're going to give an account. I guess the verse that sticks in my mind so much in thinking about the responsibility of living for God is in Galatians 6, 7, where it says, be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man sows, that shall he reap. That sowing and reaping we talked about last time, and sow bountifully. Whenever you can, sow. And we talked about in love or in goodness. And I think we're coming back to that idea here. Now, in verse 10, so remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. Now, this deal about vexation, I think, is really an anxious attitude toward life, a worrying about the past or an anxiety for the future. The attitude of your life will make all the difference. And then it says, put away pain from your body. Well, literally, the word is evil there. I think it's, again, that reference to the propensity of man toward evil. Be careful of that. And then it's saying, enjoy youth. But I want you to know, young people, you're not going to be young forever. Enjoy middle age, where you make all the money. Most people in their middle age make the most money they're ever going to make in their life right then. They're able to do what they want to. Enjoy middle age. Enjoy your family. But I want you to know middle age is not going to be here forever. Are you older than years? Enjoy those years, those maturity. Enjoy the quietness and the peace that comes with those years. But I want you to know you're going to die. So what he's saying is, live life to the fullest, recognizing God's presence while you have those times in your life, because they are going to pass away. Now, in chapter 12, verse 1, it says, remember your Creator. Now, the word Creator here is a form of the Hebrew word bara, which means create. In Genesis 1:1, it's used uniquely in the Bible for God creating, and this is a plural form, the Creator. Now, the plural, Hebrew has a lot of plurals we don't have. The word face in Hebrew is plural. The word hand in Hebrew is plural. The word heavens in Hebrew is plural. So it's like Elohim. It's a plural, but it's talking about the Creator God. Remember the Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come, when the years draw near, when you will say, I have no delight in them. Remember when it says, in the days of your youth, we're talking not about his children so much, but these young men he's trying to teach. He's an educator trying to teach the new generation of naive people. What he's saying is the same thing we said in the last part of chapter 11. Enjoy your youth, but remember God. Don't leave him out of the system. Don't live as if there is no God, because you'll be held accountable. Enjoy the good days, the young days, while you have them, because you're going to grow old. You're going to have arthritis. You're going to have the problems of senility. You're going to have them. Now, when it mentions here, remember, we're not talking to older people about experiencing these things. We're talking about young people preparing them for these things. Now, in verse 2 and following, down through 5, I want to read you out of a Living Bible. Now, Living Bible is a paraphrase, and it's going to interpret these passages, but I think accurately so here. Someone once told me about the Living Bible, that it's more conservative than God, which means it tries to take the ambiguity out of the text. It's a good reading Bible, but I wouldn't base doctrine on it. Listen to 2 through 5 in the Living Bible. It will be too late then to try to remember them, when the sun and the light and the stars and the moon are dim to your old eyes, and there is no silver lining left among your clouds. There will come a time when your limbs will tremble with age. Your strong legs will become weak. Your teeth will be too few to do their work. There will be blindness too. Then your lips will be tightly closed while eating, when your teeth are all gone. And you awaken at dawn with the first note of the birds, but you yourself will be deaf and tuneless with a quivering voice. You will be afraid of heights and of falling, a white-haired, withered old man dragging himself along without sexual desire, standing at death's door and nearing his everlasting home as the mourners go along the streets. It's not a pretty picture, but it's an accurate picture. Old age is something that will happen to all of us. Now, the text seems to use the metaphor of a weather-beaten old house, and it uses for coming age. The Living Bible paraphrased this, put it into common words, but listen to the original. Let's talk about it. Before the sun, the light, and the moon and the stars are darkened, and the clouds return after the rain. This seems to be not only expressing the joy of those happy days, you can go where you want to, enjoy the sunshine, but it also be talking about the eyes can enjoy nature as it wants. You can't see the beauty of a field. You can't see the gorgeousness of a fall moon. The eyes are going, and the beauty of nature goes with them. Then it talks about in the days that the watchmen of the house tremble. Now, this seems to imply to the arms, because the next one refers to the legs, and the mighty men stoop. The arms tremble, the legs tremble. It mentions here about the grinding ones stand idle because they are few. Seems to refer to the teeth, that the teeth fall out, go bad. And those who look through the windows grow dim. The eyes grow dim. The doors in the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low. I think I was talking about the lips, that you can't talk as well, and you can't hear. The ears are going. And one will rise the sound of a bird. Now, what this is talking about is sleeplessness. It's not that the older people can hear every noise, but what they do hear, every one of them wakes them up. They don't sleep well, and every sound bothers them. And all the daughters of song will sing softly. There's a quietness to their voice, a trembling of their voice, as well as they hear other people's voices that way. Furthermore, men are afraid of high places and of the terrors of the road. Have you ever seen an old person at a little bitty step up get all shook up, grab for something to hold on to? There's a fear of walking because falling has become so predominant. The inner ears are gone, and there's a stumbling and a fear of walking and getting up. Notice where it says, the almond tree blossoms. Now, the almond tree is a pink bloom, but after about a month it turns white. It's the picture of a white-haired man. The grasshopper drags himself along, the picture of a bent-over man walking slow, limping maybe. Then it says the canterbury is ineffective. Well, the canterbury was a little home remedy to help one's appetite, both physically, to help his appetite to eat more food, and sexually. What it's saying is there comes a time when all the medicine in the world doesn't help those things. Just got worn out. For the man goes to his eternal home. This seems to refer to Sheol, the grave, because these mourners seem to be professional mourners that are just, the older man sees them around the corner waiting for his death. You know, he can hear that song they're going to sing at his funeral. That's the idea here. This is one of the classical passages of old age anywhere in the Bible, is this one right here. Verse 6, remember him before the silver cord is broken and the golden bowl is crushed. Well, the silver cord and the golden bowl seem to say two things: the value of life and the frailty of life. Now, it seems to be the picture of an ancient lamp held from the ceiling by a cord. If the cord breaks, the lamp falls, and it breaks. I've brought with me today, this was a lamp that was found by the Dung Gate in Jerusalem. It is a lamp that has been dated archaeologically around the time of David. It's a very ancient lamp. They held it like this, put olive oil in it, put the wick there. You can still see where it's burnt. This is the kind of lamp that would be suspended from the ceiling. It was so fragile when it fell, it's just pottery. It totally fell apart. Well, that's the idea here. Now, notice where it says, the pitcher by the well is shattered and the wheel by the cistern is crushed. It's talking about that things wear out. Now, I think my translation, the New American Standard, says there's two things. But really, it's one, I think. It's the ancient desert well with the bucket sitting here and the wheel with the rope on it. I don't care how good a water down there. If the pitcher breaks or the rope wears out, you can't get it. That's like age. It's this coming problems of old age. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Now, verse 7 is a very important verse in Ecclesiastes. The dust will return to the earth is simply a reflection of what? Hebrews 3:19, the curse of God on man for rebellion. But what does it mean the spirit will return to God who gave it? Well, the term spirit is exactly the same Hebrew term as the term breath. And since I think the first part of this relates this passage to Genesis 2, I really think it's the breath of life mentioned in Genesis 2:7. Let me give you some examples of what I mean. Job 34:14-15, and especially Ecclesiastes 3:21. I think it's talking about the fact, not that just when man dies, he's just like the animal. I think this is the real shining hope of if he didn't understand the resurrection, he did trust God with his future life. And what he's trying to say is, that breath of life that God breathed in the man, that was man's uniqueness, is going back to God, and the clay, the body, is going back to the earth. Now, he doesn't have a full-blown understanding of resurrection, and he doesn't have a full-blown hope of what God and Christ is going to do. But he does have a hope that the God who controls history and the God who he can't know, but that he can know some things about, is going to do something with that unique part of him. It's a saying, I don't know where I'm going, but I'm going to be with him. I don't know what's going to be preserved, but that unique thing in me that God made, God's going to take care of. And I think that's very important. We see this real hope here in this chapter. Now, verse 8, I think, is a new paragraph, and I disagree with the English translations that I have looked at. They make the paragraph division in verse 9. It doesn't fit the context. Vanity of vanities can't refer to man's spirit going back to God. That would destroy the whole context. But vanity of vanities does refer to the upcoming discussion about wisdom again. So I think the paragraph should begin in vanity of vanities. There is a Hebrew conjunction in verse 9, but there isn't in verse 8. And so that tells me verse 8 should be the paragraph division, not verse 9. Now, in verse 9 it says, in addition to being a wise man, now this is a technical term for the wisdom sage. Remember, there's three sources of inspired truth in the Old Testament. There's the law, like Moses. There is the prophets. And the third source is the sage or wise man, like Job, parts of Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Songs. Those are wisdom literature books. Now, notice what it says. The wise man, the preacher. Now, remember I've told you that's not a good translation. The word koleth is better professor, something like that. Also taught the people knowledge, and he pondered, searched out, and arranged many proverbs. Now, what he's saying is, I didn't tell you anything that I didn't check on first. I'm not just passing on knowledge to you. What I passed on to you is what I personally have experienced in life. I've sought for the truth in personal experience, and I'm passing on to you what I've sought. And then he says, the professor sought to find delightful words and to write the words and the truth correctly. The author wanted to find truth, and then he wanted to put it in pithy maxims that could be memorized, a shocking little paradoxes that would catch the mind and the intellect. Now, verse 11 is really a strange thing. It says, the words of the wise men are like goads, and the masters of these collections are like well-driven nails. They are given by one shepherd. Now, remember that Hebrew parallelism or poetry is not a rhyme, it's a parallel. I personally believe that the words of the wise and the masters of the collections are parallel. And to agree with me on that is the Revised Standard Version, Loophole, Good News Translation, and the New Jerusalem Bible. So I would retranslate the masters of the collection, which seems to refer to the writers. No. It's the collected sayings. And I would change your translation to the words of the wise men are like goads, and the collected sayings are like well-driven nails. That's the intent of this. Now, goads are something you prod animals with. You get them moving into action. What he's saying is these pithy wisdom sayings should make men think, should cause them to do certain things, should make them explore truth for themselves. And they're like well-driven nails. Well, I would retranslate that. Well-fitting wooden pegs. They didn't have nails. But these words of wisdom are going to fit in life and hold life together as nothing else can. Things aren't going to be flopping loose through life. It's going to be a philosophy and a view toward God that will hold all circumstances, good and bad, together that man will not be afraid. Notice it says they are given by one shepherd. Here again is another allusion to the inspiration of this writing. They're saying God told us these things. God showed us this wisdom. Because in the Bible, the word shepherd many times refers to God. That's why in the New American Standard Version, a capital S means they think it refers to God. Let me give you a few. Genesis 48:15, Genesis 49:24, Psalms 23:1, how popular and famous. Psalms 80:1, Psalms 95:7, Psalms 40:11. Isaiah 40:11, Jeremiah 31:10, Ezekiel 34:11 and following. God as shepherd. I think God, the author is saying God is the source of this wisdom there. He's claiming inspiration for himself. Now, verse 12 is very important, too, to bring a balance. It says, but beyond this, my son. Now, that means that generation of naive young men who are going into service for the king, apparently. Be warned, the writings of many books is endless, and excessive devotion to books is wearying to the body. Now, that's a contradiction to all he said, if we take that literally. I think there's something in verse 12 and 11 that's saying, searching secular knowledge for wisdom is a wearying enterprise. You can read all the books and still be miserable. But searching the truths of God, the inspired books, the canonized books, is a source of wisdom and truth. I don't think he's saying don't study. I think he's saying watch the source of the books. Are they from God? Are they from man? Much learning can make you weary, but the wisdom of God can bring you to a happy, content life. Then it moves on. And verse 13 is the conclusion. The conclusion. To sum it all up, somewhat up, the whole book. The whole book is summed up right here. When all has been heard, number one, revere God and keep His commandments. Man, the book of James, the New Testament example of wisdom literature, says that same thing. It's attitude matched with action. It's knowledge matched with deed. It's word matched with life. What is it? Christianity or biblical faith is not knowing truth. It's living the truth you know. Faith is involved not, do not be hearers of the word only, be doers of the word. That's what he's saying. The Hebrew word shema means to hear and do, and that's what it's saying here. Fear God, reverence God, have an attitude toward life that recognizes the presence and the sovereignty and the power of God. Realize He's involved in your life. Be content. But once you have that life perspective of faith, then sow in love. Treat with kindness other men. Spread your bread upon the water. It will come back to you. You'll find it. You'll recover it. That seems to be the thrust here. Fear God. Know God. Take Him into the system. And then because He's in the system, live appropriately. Keep His commands. This applies to every person. There's no exceptions. Now, King James has, for this is the whole duty of man. That really is an unfortunate translation because it implies things that aren't here. And here's the third reason for that: fear God and do His commandments. Because God will bring every act into judgment, everything which is hidden, whether good or evil. And this everything which is hidden that God's going to bring into account is a common New Testament theme. Matthew 10:26, Romans 2:16, 1 Corinthians 4:5. And then it says, whether it is good or evil. Friends, God's going to judge all men. He's going to judge the good. He's going to judge the bad. He's going to judge the living. He's going to judge the dead. That's some New Testament emphasis too. In 1 Corinthians 3, 10 through 15, talks about the judgment of God's people. And that same thing is recorded in 2 Corinthians 5, 10, where it says, we will all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. We're going to give an account of every idle deed and every idle word done in the body. Friends, live for God. Recognize it. Live for Him, because you're going to give an account to Him. Judgment is coming. And that's how the book is summed up. That's what the whole thing's about. He looked at life from two perspectives. If this is all there is, it's the pits. We live for a while. Our lives are determined by fate and luck and circumstance. Nothing has meaning. When we die, we're just fertilizer. Well, that's one possibility. But God is in the system. The Creator Redeemer of all the earth loves us, gives us the simple pleasures of life, accepts us like we are, sin and all, and will somehow, someday, in His own way, bring us to Himself. Don't forget God, young man. You're going to stand before Him. Be content with today, young man. Don't worry about the past. Don't worry about the future. That seems to be the major thrust of this book. Well, I have really enjoyed being with you in this study. I want to mention to you that I have a set of audio cassette tapes that we've done that are available in a folder like this. And there are 7 audio cassette tapes on the book of Ecclesiastes with outlines that are for the whole book. These are available to you if you'll simply write for our free catalog. We have a teaching catalog listing audio tapes that has over 1,100 titles, some verse by verse, like the book of Ecclesiastes. If you'll write for them, I think you'll really enjoy them. And it's a much more detailed study because I had much more time to do this when I went through it on a Sunday night with my church. I think this is the most contemporary book to speak to the arrogance of our technological age. I think it's a book that really says a word philosophically about where we are, all caught up in existentialism and humanism. This, to me, is one of the most relevant biblical books for our day. I've really enjoyed looking at it with you briefly. I hope you'll buy Loophole's commentary. I think it'll be a blessing to you to understand. And I'll see you again, same time, same place, next week. God bless you.